Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Daphne.
And this is Squid Game Cast, episode 13.
Season 2 comes out on December 26th, so in this episode we're catching you up on what happened in season 1.
That's 9 days as we're talking here, so we're here to catch you up, plus we'll share a little bit, actually not much information about what's in store for season 2, because I don't like spoilers, but we will talk about it a little bit and also some of our hopes for it. Mostly, we're here to catch you guys up. If you're new to us, thanks for checking us out. We're glad you're listening. We are the Podcastica Network. We do in-depth episode-by-episode coverage of TV shows that we all genuinely love. We only cover shows that we really like, and some movies too, of course. And you can find all of our podcasts and contact information and things like that at podcastica.com. I thought we would talk just a little bit about why we're even covering the show. Why do we like it? It's one of the most popular shows ever to be on. I think it's the most popular show ever on Netflix, even more than Bridgerton. but I just think it's one of those shows that you can't look away from. It's so engaging. It's different, the juxtaposition of the childlike with the cruel and horrific, the commentary on class and wealth disparity, and really putting forward these characters that personalize that, and you just feel their desperation and a lot of times their depravity. It's really interesting. It's smart writing. It's darkly funny at times, which I love. The characters are great. Most of them are dead, but we like Song Gi-hun's performance, Lee Jung-jae's performance, so good. The visuals are so interesting, striking, and how it's all like kids' game visuals expanded up into this adult level. The reality show addictiveness of the competition that draws us in. The music is so unique and ominous and cool. And I was just thinking about it too. Why do I like the show? And I've always been drawn to stories where somebody or a small group of people go to a place that's really dangerous, and it seems like their odds of survival are very low. Like, I felt that way about Luke and Obi-Wan when they went into the Death Star in Star Wars, and Frodo and Sam in Lord of the Rings. And now Daphne here is covering Skeleton Crew, the new Star Wars show. I've only seen the first episode, but that gave me that same feeling. These kids go off onto this. Well, I don't want to spoil it, but it's the same kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, and me covering a Star Wars show does not seem like it's something that I would ever do. But for various reasons, as we talk about in the podcast, I'm loving it, and it's great. It's been tons of fun. On the flip side of that, the Squid Game, I like the sense of urgency. I like the social commentary, like you just mentioned. I appreciate the writing. I'm one of those people that's going to watch the subtitles and not listen to the dubbed, so
me too.
I pay very close attention to that.
I do that mostly because I want to hear the actors' voices. I want to hear their performances, you know, even if I can't understand what they're saying, you can still get a lot through how they're saying it.
Yeah. And I think you get as they're saying it and their emotional reaction, like it's the diction, it's all of that just comes across better than if you're listening to something dubbed. And
I agree.
Always, I would stick to the subtitle versions.
It's harder to podcast on because I pause and or you're taking notes and then you don't know what they're saying. So
exactly. There's a lot of pausing. So usually the first time when I'm getting ready to cover the show, I will watch the first time through the episode, not taking notes, just so that I'm capturing, you know, and my brain is capturing what I'm seeing. Then the next time through, I will take notes.
So we're going to read a summary of each episode and just talk a little bit about what stands out in our memory about it. We let's try to keep it, you know, 5 to 10 minutes on each episode just so we can not take too long, not go too deep. We'll go plenty deep, though, when we cover the episodes one by one. Full on spoilers for season one here. Obviously, if you haven't seen Squid Game up until now and you don't want to be spoiled, then you should not be listening to this. Go watch it and then come back. but here's a quick synopsis just to remind us of the full season, and then we'll get into the episode by episode. So season one, in South Korea, Song Gi-hun, a divorced father, an indebted gambling addict who lives with his elderly mother, is invited to play a series of children's games for a chance at a large cash prize. Accepting the offer, he's taken to an unknown location where he finds himself among 455 other players who are all deep in financial trouble. The players are made to wear green tracksuits and are kept under watch at all times by masked guards in pink jumpsuits, with the games overseen by the front man, who wears a black mask and a black uniform. The players soon discover that losing a game results in their deaths, with each death contributing 100 million won, which is about 70,000 US dollars, to the potential 45.6 billion won or $32 million grand prize. Gi-hun allies with other players, including his child friend Cho Sang-woo and North Korean defector Kang Se-byuk, to try to survive the game's physical and psychological twists, whilst Detective Hwang Jun-ho infiltrates the games as one of the guards to find his missing brother. So why don't you read the synopsis for the first episode and then we'll get into it a little bit.
Okay, so the first episode is Red Light, Green Light. Song Ji-hun is down on his luck, having accumulated enormous debts with loan sharks while becoming estranged from his daughter and ex-wife. In a subway, a well-dressed man invites him to play a game of Dakji for money and offers an opportunity to play more games with much higher stakes. Ji-hun accepts, is sedated, and awakens in a dormitory with 455 others, identified only by numbers on their green tracksuits. A group of masked guards in pink jumpsuits arrive and explain that the players are all in dire financial straits, but will be given billions of won in prize money if they can win 6 games over 6 days. The games are overseen by the front man, who is masked and dressed in black. Gi-hun befriends player 001, an elderly man suffering from a brain tumor. He also recognizes 2 other players, Chong Sang-woo, a childhood classmate who became an investment broker, and player 067, a pickpocket who stole Gi-hun's money after he won a horse race wager. The first game is Red Light, Green Light, where anyone caught moving is shot dead on the spot, revealing the sadistic nature of the games. Half the contestants panic and attempt to flee upon realizing this, turning the game into a massacre. With help from Sang-woo and player 199, Ali Abdul, Gi-hun finishes the game alive.
So what stood out most about that one?
Well, first of all, I think up until they went in to play that first game, they were all kind of in this dream world thinking that they were going to be able to win this money. They didn't realize what the stakes were. And then they go in to this big room. They realize what the game is. But when that first guy is shot dead, they all start panicking, which results in half of them dying because they're trying to escape. They don't really know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, the moment everybody starts getting shot and blood everywhere and people freaking out and half the people managing to keep their shit together enough to stay still, but most not, half not. That, of course, stands out. And I think that's one of the moments that stands out the most in the whole series. And I don't think Rima ever watched any more after that. She's like, I'm out. That was it. And we used to do a segment called Fucked Up Moment of the Week. And I feel like this could be a nomination for Fucked Up Moment of the Series. You know, it's pretty bad.
Well, what better way to solidify what they're trying to do?
Yeah, right.
And how this serious is the kind of show we are.
Yeah. But to save it for the end when we're already kind of invested, you know, like, what are we watching here? Oh, that's what we're watching.
Yeah. But we hadn't really met any of the players at that point, really. We hadn't gotten too deep into it by the time they go in.
Except for Gi-hun, that's it.
Gi-hun, you know. The rest, you kind of, you might see them, but it's not such a big deal.
But still, it's human beings, so we're like, whoa.
Yeah, what? And I just remember, and I won't talk about this too much. But you mentioned the reality style competition vibe of this, and it just makes me think of the reality version of this show, which I know we both loved and covered on the podcast.
Squid Game, The Challenge, yeah.
Yeah, some of the similarities between the two and the excitement, and thankfully they weren't going through the same things that they're going through on here.
I wouldn't watch that if they had that.
No. No, but this kind of has like a Hunger Games vibe.
Absolutely.
If you think about it.
Oh, yeah. It's weird because, I mean, we talked about it during the podcast that, I think a lot of us, not all of us, maybe not even the majority, maybe just a small few, but some of us watch this show really wanting to be like, I'm only watching it because it's got this great message about wealth disparity, and it's smart. But I think just about every person also gets caught up in the competition of it, just like you would when you're watching any reality show. You know, you want Gi-hun to win, and you can't help but feel that. But still, if it was real and it was that cruel, I'd like to think, I know I wouldn't want to watch it. So it helps that it's fiction.
Yeah. And I think, too, the underdog nature of it.
Yeah.
Because at first you see what Gi-hun has been up to, and it's hard to feel bad for him in some ways, just because it's a situation he created with his gambling.
Mm-hmm. And he's kind of not as likable at first either.
No.
Yeah.
But over time, he becomes this great underdog that
and a hero.
Yeah, for everyone. And I think the character moment for this episode that stood out to me was Ali Abdul saving Gi-hun's life. Because he had him in his hand. If he hadn't done that, Gi-hun would be dead. And we'd have had no more of, I mean, what's the story after that part? But I think that was a real character moment for this episode.
Yeah, it made you really like him and feel sad for him and hateful towards, what's the guy's name?
Sung-woo,
yeah.
His
later on. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Friend.
His childhood friend that.
So, and I just think this is a great first episode. It has everything I said I liked about the show at the beginning. It has all of that, you know, the visuals, the intensity, everything. So, okay, if I go to the next one?
Yeah, I think we're ready.
Okay. Season 1, Episode 2, Hell. With over half of the players killed in the first game, many survivors demand to be released. Using the game's third clause, they narrowly vote to cancel the game and send everyone home, but without any prize money. Back in Seoul, Gi-hun goes to the police, but no one believes him except Detective Hwang Joon-ho, whose brother received the same invitation card and has recently disappeared. The players are invited to re-enter the game, and many return out of desperation. This includes Gi-hun, whose mother needs surgery, Sang-woo, who is about to be arrested for financial fraud, player 001, who does not wish to die in the outside world, player 067, who wishes to rescue her parents, that's Sebyeok, from North Korea and get her little brother out of an orphanage, player 199 at Ali, a Pakistani migrant worker who attacked and gravely injured his boss for withholding his wages. Player 101 named Jang Duk-soo, a gangster on the run from gambling debts and his ex-bosses. Joon-ho secretly follows Gi-hun when the guards pick him up. So what about this one?
I feel like this started to take us down the road of Jin-ho and what his part in all of this is. Basically, he's looking for his brother. His brother has disappeared. And Gi-hun's little card is really the first bit of evidence that he's been able to get his hands on to understand what may have happened to his brother. And at this point, all we're thinking is his brother, you know, participating in the game this year? You know, where is his brother?
Yeah.
We're not really sure.
You'd think, yeah, he'd be one. Yeah, I think we thought he'd probably was one of the contestants.
And then the desperation. Everyone going back, or most of the people going back, because even death, even though death is a scary thing for them, going back to the real world empty-handed and the despair that they're in, they realize that they had to go and fight for it anyway, because it's not worth living, I think, is what they got in their heads, is that there's no life for us out there. We have to go and try to do something.
Yeah, we have to. And it's very much a commentary on social class and how I think the reason why there's so much childlike imagery in this show is because you find out rich, bored people are doing it just for their own entertainment value. And the poor people are like their playthings. They have no regard for their value as human beings. And then the people who are playing have no power. And so they are desperate, like you said. And you said that the first episode, you don't really get to know them when you just get to know Gi-hun. So now we do get to know a few of them and see that they're just as desperate, if not more, than him. So we get more connected with them, too.
Yeah, we get to see Sebyeok's little brother that she's trying to protect. We get to see Ollie's family. And you start to connect with these people and realize that they're so much bigger than their numbers, and that some of the stories can pull on your heartstrings. While on the flip side of that, Player 101, Duk-soo, is an evil gangster type character who is going to be a menace.
Yeah.
Within that Squid Game bubble.
Mm-hmm. And it's even worse than you think by the end of it.
Yeah.
I really also, one thing that stood out to me is when they lined up to decide whether they were going to stay or go. And there's that big green O and red X on the buttons and they had to press. It was just so well presented. It's not even one of the games, but it brings all that tension and the childlike imagery and everything. And then to have who we find out later is Oh Il-nam be the final vote, the old man. I was sort of wondering when I was reading this, why did he, since we know it's okay to say what happens later on, that he's the one who started the games, why did he vote to let everyone go home? And my only guess would be that's just part of the game for him to see if they're desperate enough to want to come back or something, you know?
Yeah, I think it's honestly, he had everyone's note, including all of us. Nobody knew that he was behind all of this. And I think it was just another part of his twisted game that he was putting people through. He created this world for them to duke it out to the death. And this is just another way to him to add another little element to the situation. I think he knew, based on all of the times that they'd held these games, they were probably going to come back anyway.
Yeah. And also, then you would have a game where everyone really chose to be there knowing exactly what they were getting themselves into. That's different than people feeling like they were forced to be there. You know, everyone who ended up there chose to be there knowing they could die being there.
Exactly. At that point, at first, they're coming to join a game. They think it's just a regular game. Mm-hmm. When they come back, they've made a choice that means that they will most likely die.
Right.
Because only one person's going to win this.
Although we're all foolish enough to think that we could be the ones to win.
I think so. I think the dream, the hope of being able to escape the life they were in is enough to keep them going, because that sacrifice is, you know, I mean, they get nothing if they die. They get nothing. There's nothing sent back to their families. But the hope of being able to provide something for their family.
So we hope.
Yeah, is their only hope, and they just keep pushing themselves through it.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's go into the next one. Your
okay.
turn.
Okay, so the man with the umbrella. Jun-ho successfully infiltrates the games by disguising himself as a mass worker, and it is revealed that the location is a remote island. Players are now more prepared and start forming alliances. Gi-hun, Sang-woo, player 001, and player 199, Ali Abdul, team up. Se-byeok explores an air vent and witnesses workers melting pots of sugar. The second game is revealed to be Popki, which is where each player must perfectly extract a stamped shape from a Dalgona honeycomb candy under a 10-minute time frame. Sang-woo learns of player 067, Se-byeok's discovery, and recognizes the game beforehand, but does not warn his teammates and chooses the easiest shape for himself. This is where we're starting to really get him. Gi-hun ends up picking the most difficult shape, an umbrella. Still, he is able to complete the game by licking the back of the honeycomb to melt it. Player 212, a rowdy and manipulative woman, helps Dixue complete the game with a smuggled lighter. A player about to be executed takes a guard hostage and forces him to unmask. Shocked that the staff member is a young man, the player shoots himself, and the front man kills the guard for revealing his identity. They have very strict rules in the Squid Game Dome.
What stands out the most to me in this one, I think, is it's just so weird and unique and interesting to have a grown man sitting here with a little candy and a needle scritching at it, knowing if he breaks it, he's going to die. It's like, where have you ever seen anything like that before? Never. Nowhere.
Nowhere. I mean, it's life or death, and we're talking about a piece of candy.
In this room that looks like it's right out of Romper Room or something.
It's true. We get to meet Mignot, who is player 212. She is definitely
delightful.
Yeah, she's a wild woman. She's kind of manipulative and very loud. And
the kind of woman who would walk by you and pretend not to see you and then just like try to scare you or something, you know?
Exactly. She's very creepy.
Yeah.
You can't trust her. And she's all about, you know, Duxu, which means that I'm not all about her. Because he's a problem.
She did have some sympathetic moments later on because she treated her so badly. But for the most part, I was just like, man, I would be keeping as far away from her as I could.
She did have a redemption moment later once we get to that episode. I'm sure you already know what I'm referring to.
I can picture it now. also, what stands out to me is that Gi-hun, he got stuck with that umbrella in part because of Sang-woo, and he seemed like he was going to be a goner, and then he, I think, sweated on it, and then it dawned on him that if it was wet, it would be easier to cut out, so he started licking it, and that just shows you that he's a resourceful person, you know? He seems at first like, oh man, he's not going to last very long, this guy. He's sometimes not too bright or whatever. But he ends up being a very resourceful, persistent person.
Yeah, he is. You start to get a little bit endeared to him.
Yeah.
Especially because you see him really connected with Oh-il Nam. And it gives you that, you know, that feeling of, you know, even if he is a bit of a jerk and kind of out of control, he's got a heart there.
Yeah. Because Olam at this point seems like a frail old man. So, yeah.
Exactly. Like I said, he had us all snowed right from the beginning. We all looked at him like he needed to be protected.
But yeah, you're totally right. Gi-hun is, he often reacts with his heart before his calculating mind, where he will try to protect the less strong people.
Yeah. I think, too, we got to see a bit of Jun-ho, like, really starting to use his undercover skills to infiltrate this Squid Game. Not realizing what this is going to lead him to. Like, he has no idea. He's just trying to find his brother. Mm-hmm. And so we really don't get, you know, we want him to find his brother, but we really don't know what the stakes are until much later in the season.
Yeah, it's kind of just a mystery. Like, we're,
it is.
Ooh, what's this going to be? With him, yeah, what stands out to me about Jun-ho the most, a few things. One is he's damn lucky. That strains the point of believability a lot of times, that he doesn't get killed. Two, his story to me is probably the least interesting. It's still interesting. It's thrilling. It's mysterious. It's tense, but it doesn't tap in, to me at least, to that whole theme of class difference, or I can't tell how it has any deeper meaning. Maybe I'm missing something, but to me, it's just a straight up kind of thriller kind of thing. And I presume he's still alive. We don't know for sure, but they left it open. And you would think there's some reckoning that's left to come between him and his brother. So I hope, if that's true, that they use him well in the second season, you know?
I think his story is one that's meant to really be a slow burn until we get to the climax between him and his brother. So I expect more potentially out of season two than what we saw in season one. I think that was really just the slow incline. And then it will amp up. Because really front and center was how terrifying this game is that everyone is in.
Yeah. I think
that was a lot of the attention. While he's starting to bring attention to, well, you know, it's not just about what the actual threat in the game is. It's about the people who built that world, too.
Yeah.
And he kind of draws attention to that.
Yeah. And it's very odd. Another thing that's left to be mined and for us to discover is, why did his brother, after he won the game, decide to stay and be an administrator of the game?
Yeah.
So, but I think maybe an interesting way to go with the story of these two brothers, because this is a story about class difference and wealth, disparity of wealth. They used to come from the same family. Well, they came from the same family. They used to be at the same level. Now his brother is one of the other kinds of people. And so how do they,
how are they going to reconcile that? Yeah. when we get to that. And I think, like I said, I think Jun-ho is trying to do his best to figure things out. And there's a lot he's going to have to reconcile within himself. Because in this whole process, he hasn't been the good guy cop. There are a few things that he's done that aren't necessarily what I think he would have preferred to do, which is like when he took the guy's place.
Hmm. I mean, I feel like once he got in there, a lot of times if he didn't kill somebody, that he would probably die, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And but I don't think that sits well with him. I don't think sits well with who he is.
Yeah. All right. Should I go on to the next one?
Yep. I think we're ready.
It's number four. Stick to the team. Not stick it to the team. Stick to the team. Player 111, a disgraced doctor, secretly works with a handful of guards to harvest organs from dead players to sell on the black market in return for information on upcoming games. That story, it's like, just when you think, I mean, we didn't need that. It was already dark enough. And then it's like, oh my God. When Duck Soo kills a player accusing him of taking extra food, the guards do nothing to stop him and the prize money's value is increased. Realizing they can freely kill other players to raise the prize money, Duck Soo and his gang start a massive riot after Lights Out, resulting in players attacking each other. Gi-hun's group survives and exchange names to build trust. Player 199 is Ali Abdul. Player 067 is Kang Se-byuk. Player 001, because of his brain tumor, has trouble remembering his name. Player 212, named Han Min-yao, has sex with Duck Soo. In the third game, players are told to form groups of 10. For Gi-hun's team, Se-byuk recruits player 240, a girl close to her age. The game is revealed to be tug of war on two raised platforms where a team wins by dragging the opposing team off of the platform to their deaths. Duck Soo, having learned of the game from player 111 beforehand, picks only strong men and rejects Min Yao, who joins Gi-hun's team. After Duck Soo's team wins their match handily, Gi-hun's team struggles against another all-male team.
Yes.
Great episode.
It was, and I couldn't believe that they were taking a game as simple as tug of war and turning it into like a murder fest.
I know.
Basically. And they were so all wrong. Watching it happen, so they knew
what they were about to
what they were
be
about
a part
to
of.
Do.
Yeah, that's and a good it, point. They're like horrified. Oh.
But Gi-hun, I mean, Sang-woo came through. This is the first time I feel like Sang-woo came through.
Yes.
And that was with the idea of how to beat the other team. Oh, well, Nam tried, but it wasn't enough. They needed to do more. And Sang-woo came through with what they needed to do to win and survive. Because honestly, on paper, there's no way that Gi-hun's team would have won.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yes,
I mean, it doesn't make sense.
No, I mean, it was great. So, yeah, having a player, as we know him now at this point, player one, give all this strategy about leaning back to start. And then I forget what else he said, but just all this technique. And you think, okay, maybe they have a chance. And they do it and it seems to be working, but then not. That was good because you like the back and forth where you think, oh, wait, maybe it isn't so bad. Oh, wait, it is bad. Now what are they going to do? That kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, Sang-woo. I mean, it's the next episode that they win because I think this is the only game that has a cliff ends on a cliffhanger,
yeah.
Which is great because they're actually on a cliff.
Yeah, basically. I mean, getting pulled off.
He decided to just kind of let go of the rope a little bit, let the other team fall on their asses, and then drag them off.
Yep. And it worked.
Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't give Sang-woo too much credit for that because he's only helping his team because that's what he has to do to survive himself.
It's for him, it's all about self-preservation and money. Yeah. Like it's all about greed and money for him. Which
at
I
any
know
cost,
that they're all,
at any cost.
Yeah, I know they're all there for the money, but with him, he's ruthless. Like in some ways, he's on the level of Duck Soo as far as villainy. Because I think he may not be as brute force crazy as Duck Soo, he's intelligent and using his brain to be strategic in a terrible way. Like,
well, the conclusion I came to with him, and I think you guys felt he's a sleazy guy. I think you guys might have felt more critical of him than I did because I do think they're all there to win, and that means mm-hmm. other people die. But and you know, Gi-hun was right there with everyone else helping drag a bunch of other guys to their death in tug of war. But the thing is, when they started the Squid Game, they said something like, those of you who make it to the end of all six games will win this money. I think they made it sound like it could be more than just one person. I was listening, unless I missed it, they never said only one person was going to win. And so with that, then it makes, in my view, Sang-woo look a lot worse because if he thought there was a possibility that he could be sharing that money with five or six other people, then he shouldn't be trying to stick it to his friends. But if he really thinks that only one person is going to win, then I can't say I totally blame him for trying to be that person no matter what it takes, personally.
I don't know. I mean, going into it, he didn't know some of the other people that they all teamed up together, but he did know Gi-hun. They were friends or classmates growing up together. They did have a relationship at one time outside of this game. And I just think that he didn't do anything to try to save his friend at all, to me, other than when he had to do it.
With tug of war, yeah.
With tug of war.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, you know that the only one person's going to win this game and everyone else is going to die, then I don't blame anyone for doing whatever it takes to make sure they're not that person. Because whoever you know or not, they're either going to be dead or you are, you know?
True. I mean, that is true. That is true. The whole side story with the doctor was, I mean, at first I was thinking, why are they adding this to it? And honestly, I think I came to the conclusion that it just showed another level of how people are commodities outside of this. Like, they thought of everything, not only, okay, we're going to kill people, but, oh, we're going to harvest the organs and we're going to put them, we're going to sell them. Like, what other way to make money off these people?
And even there was one part that I was reminded of when I went through my notes where, so Jun-ho and this other guard are down near the water because they were going to dive to go take the harvested organs to sell them. And the guy figured out that Jun-ho was an imposter and drew his gun. They drew their guns on each other or something. I think it's where Jun-ho has his gun on this guy and this guy's helpless and Jun-ho's demanding information and the guy's begging to have his life saved or whatever. And he admits that him and some other guards, before they harvested the organs of this woman, they had sex with her. And I'm like, wow, okay, maybe this is the most fucked up moment in the series. Like, that's incredibly horrible. But it also, yeah, just shows that the depravity extends to the guards and the desperation. It's not just the contestants. Like, yeah. I think you were just saying that, yeah.
Yeah, and one thing I didn't bring up from the episode before this, the importance of secrecy and having no one see anyone's face, including the guards, and how serious it is to the point of killing a man who had no choice but to take his mask off because a gun was being held to his head. Mm-hmm. Just shows you that there's, you know, people are expendable.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't even know for sure how much that says about how strict they are, or is it more just how little they care about these guys. Maybe it's not even that strict a rule. They're just like, oh, well, he broke the rule, kill him. You know, who cares?
Yeah. There's no talking them out of it. There's no begging for your life. You break a rule and you know the consequences. And I just get that is the norm for chilling. Squid Game Dome.
That was four, right? Is there any, let me see. I thought the visuals and intensity of the tug of war were so great. It was so intense, and the way they were all up on that big platform and you see the team drop to their deaths and then you get that camera view of them from above all splayed out on the black floor and everything. And we didn't really talk about it, but this is also the episode where, they figured out that if they kill each other, it counts just as much if they kill each other outside of the games. And that riot with the lights blinking, and that was just incredibly intense too.
Yeah. And Duk Soo, I think, is going to use everything to his advantage, and knowing he could kill people and take them out and put more money in that pot.
Yeah.
He's got his little group of thugs. He's going to make that happen. He's going to do what needs to be done.
Yeah, and he, like, that fits more into his world where he's more comfortable, probably, as a gangster, you know? The killer be killed, no morals.
Yeah, it's all about brawn.
Yeah.
With him.
All right, number five.
Number five, A Fair World. Gihan's team wins their tug-of-war match with player 001 strategy and Sangwoo's quick thinking. Anticipating another riot, they build a barricade and spend the night taking turns on guard, but Duxiu's team does not attack. Gihan reminisces on a similar situation from 10 years ago when he and many other workers from an automobile factory protested a mass layoff, which caused the failed trajectory of Gihan's life. Player 240 attempts to befriend Sebyok, but she does not reciprocate. Junho witnesses the organ harvesting racket as the guard whose identity he stole took part in it. Player 111 turns on the racketeers when the guards are unable to tell him what the next game is. Everyone involved in the racket except Junho is eventually killed, including player 111. The front man begins a facility-wide manhunt for Junho, who breaks into the front man's office. Junho learns that the game has been running for over 30 years and that his elder brother, Hwang In-ho, was the winner in 2015.
Yeah, that was a cool revelation. That might have been my favorite part of the story when he goes in there and finds those records and everything.
I think, like I said earlier, we were kind of expecting that either he died in a prior game or he was a contestant in this one.
Yeah.
And for neither of those things to be true, and for him to be a winner, it just opened things up for, okay, then what happened to him?
Right. Yeah, because I think I was probably, I don't remember actually, but I would imagine I'd be thinking in Junho's place, like, that son of a bitch, he's in some mansion somewhere and I'm stuck here with my life in danger or something, you know?
It makes me wonder if his brother, with what ends up happening to his brother, if that's just a common thing that happens with winners, like that they do this, that they get recruited. But yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was thinking about it today, because we're going to get to the episode with the VIPs, but it's just like they're so obscenely rich that they just treat people like playthings, and they have fun pitting them against each other. And I do think that's another sort of layer of commentary on society, where we have these rich billionaires who feel like they don't need to follow laws, you know, and they do pit people against each other so that we don't come after them, kind of a thing, you know. And it does feel sometimes like it's all part of the game and we're the powerless ones in the game. See, I'm getting myself all whipped up for a rebellion here. But anyway, so why was I bringing that up? So like if Junho's brother became one of these people, would he immediately start to feel that way? It also sort of made me feel like in a movie like Star Trek or something, when there's a character like Q, you know, he just can't help but fuck around with people because he's so powerful that they seem like nothing to him. And I think it's sort of like that. And so I can imagine when you get that powerful, because in this world, money is power, that if you're not careful, or if you're a certain kind of person, you could easily start thinking of people who have no power as less significant than you are, you know. It's a problem.
I mean, it's through the ages, there have always been minorities and oppressed groups of people, and this kind of points or shines a lens on it, that there are people who feel that having that much money gives them a right to, like, basically determine if someone lives or dies by putting them in a game, or celebrating when people die in this game. Like, they have so much power, and it's all gone to their heads, and they think that they get to play God. And that's kind of what I feel like with this. And so much of it reminds me of The Most Dangerous Game, which there have been so many movies built off of that story. But it's very, you know, very telling, you know, man versus man. And then all of these different elements thrown into it. At the end of the day, Oh Hil Nam built this world for them. for his friends, him and his friends, to celebrate mm-hmm. the death of others.
And just out of boredom, I think.
Out of boredom, wanting something, you know, to entertain, you know, entertain them. And it's disgusting if you think about it. But I do still stand by this show brings attention to things. And even though it is a game and it's a fictional show, there are things that you can draw conclusions from, mm-hmm. and especially in the real world today.
Yep. I'm hoping that, I'm hoping that Ki-hoon doesn't become like that. Because he did win too, you know, and sometimes I think it can be good for a story to not always give us what we want, but I don't want to see that for Gi-hoon. So I hope they don't do it.
I think Gi-hoon is a different type of winner. I think he is probably someone that they've not had that type of person win before, which leads me to believe that Junho's brother could have been very greedy. For all mm-hmm. we know, because we don't really know.
We don't know him
and
at
I'm
all.
And I'm hoping, you know, that we'll learn more. That yeah, kind of comes a little bit later when we're talking about what we're hoping for in season two.
But. Yeah, okay, yeah. Let me move on to the next one. Ganbu, number 6. The players see the bodies of player 111 and his co-conspirators, that's the doctor guy, right? Strung up yes. for cheating and are assured that the games are designed to give every player a fair chance without discrimination. For the fourth game, players are told to pair up, but discover that instead of working as a team, they will have to play against their partner in a marble game of their choice. Whoever gets all their partner's marbles within 30 minutes will win and survive. Se-byuk and player 240, named Ji-young, share their life stories. Ji-young sees Se-byuk has more to live for and sacrifices herself. Sang-woo tricks Ali into giving up his marbles and wins. The most despicable action of the whole series. Duk-soo wins against his partner and henchman, player 278. Gi-hoon exploits player 001's dementia to defeat him, only to discover that the old man was aware of the deception the entire time. Player 1, who remembers his name as Oh Il-nam, allows Gi-hun to win anyway, as he is his Ganbu, trusted friend. Gi-hoon and Se-byuk are traumatized by the deaths of their friends.
As we all were.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were.
It was a very particular episode where you stick people together who they think they're going to be fighting together. And then in every pair, one has to kill the other. It was so emotional.
Yeah. I mean, we still, at that point, there was a husband and wife who had been through the whole game together. And the husband ended up winning. And for me, though, Sang-woo's betrayal of Ali was yeah. one of the worst things I've seen on TV. because what was there not to love about Ali Abdul? At that point, everything we had seen about him and his character was something that you could get behind and cheer for. And this was like a gut punch. It yep. really was.
I agree with you.
Awful.
And then there's a part of me that's like, yeah, and Gi-hoon lied to what he thought was this old man with dementia.
True. But knowing now what I didn't know then, I'm glad he did. That's right. All I'm going to say. You just don't know. You can't always trust what they're showing you because.
No. And I'm sure there'll so be stuff much. Like that in this season too, this coming season.
I hope so.
I hope so. One thing that I loved about Squid Game, the challenge, the reality series based on the show that we also covered in the podcast, if you guys didn't know, was that they successfully engineered a similar dynamic where players didn't maybe realize that they were going to be, what did they do? They said, pick someone to have a picnic with or something. And then whoever they picked, they pitted them against each other. That yes. was great. It they created the same kind of better. Thing. They should have, but it created the same situation where you had like mother against son and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Oh my gosh, that was so hard. That created such a difficult situation to watch. Because, like in this show, Squid Game, the challenge, you get connected with characters.
Yeah.
And it was rough because you didn't want anything to happen to certain people. I mean, there were definitely the villainous type people, but not to the level of Duck Soo, let's just say that.
Right.
But there were definitely villainous people.
It was a similar dynamic that I was impressed that they pulled that off.
They did lots of little swerves where you think they're going to go do something and then the game they play is something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend it for anyone who enjoyed Squid Game. It has more personal element, but it's a ton of fun because the games like draw you in and some of the stuff that you loved about the regular original series.
Yeah. And I mean, the challenge, no pun intended, of that show for the producers was that they started with 546, right? 546 players. Mm-hmm. Is that right? How many?
Four, five, six.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't know who was going to make it to the end. So they usually on reality TV, they can follow people around and follow stories, but they would choose a few people to follow and then they would die off early and go to somebody else. And they got lucky and followed a couple that were there. They followed them from the beginning, but for the most part, they had to switch to new people as the series went along. And that made it really interesting. I mean, I would say if you just hate reality shows, then you probably aren't going to like it, but otherwise, yeah, for sure.
But it was, I enjoyed it so much and I am so excited for season two of that.
Do we have any idea when that's coming out?
No idea, but I'll be ready when it is. It'll be great.
All right. Anything else about this one? Number six?
Nope. I think we're ready to move on to number seven, which is VIPs. The players return to find Mignot, who did not have a partner for the marbles game, still alive, having been given a free advantage to the next game. That also happened in the challenge. Foreign VIPs who had been wagering on the games remotely arrived to watch and wager on the following rounds live. A Junho posing as one of the mass servants is sexually propositioned by one of them. The decadence that we saw of the VIPs was beyond. In a private room, he attacks the VIP, records his confession, and escapes the island. Meanwhile, the fifth game has players crossing a 2-panel wide bridge where the panels are each made of either tempered or regular glass, the latter of which cannot support their weight. The players at the front of the line fall to their deaths as they progressively test the panels. Duck Soo refuses to move despite the clock ticking, daring others to pass him. Mignot grabs him and, as revenge for betraying her, pulls him down with her to their deaths. Player 017, a seasoned glass worker, is able to determine which panels are safe until the front man turns off the lights, removing his advantage. With time running out, Sangwoo pushes player 017 to his death, revealing the last trick panel. Only Gi-hun, Sangwoo, Se-byeok complete the game. At its conclusion, explosions shatter the remaining panels and injure the three players. Mignot, you did it. You took out Duck Soo. That was so satisfying.
Yeah, that was good. You like to see it. I loved the bridge game too, the look of it, how high up it was, the way it was black all around. So it was like they're in a void almost. And, I don't know. It was just cool. Me and Karen and David and Jenny did a VR Squid Game, and in a mall, like there's a room and stuff, and the glass bridge game was one of the most fun. We'd all jump on there, and then it would just break below you, and you'd feel like you were falling to your death.
I can't even. I know they did something similar in the challenge, and I like how they transferred it over, because you can't do the same exact thing, but they tried. I love that we got to see the VIPs in this, because you could see just how depraved they were.
Yeah.
Some of the things in the room honestly remind me of that Eyes Wide Shut movie by Stanley Kubrick. Mm-hmm. It just was unsettling to watch.
And it goes along with that same theme that I was saying before, that same idea that they're so obscenely wealthy that they just think of people who aren't as their playthings, even the servants who they just think they can force to have sex with them anytime they want.
Oh, yeah. I love that Junho at least took one of them down or did something, because honestly,
he bit off his dick, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Got him.
Yeah.
He didn't kill him though, did he? He just, like it said, forced him to confess.
Yeah. We didn't realize those explosions with the glass did injure the players, but we don't realize just how bad it is for Sebyeok until the next episode. But she's pretty...
Fatal wounds, yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty well hurt.
The VIPs, one thing that really stands out for me is how it just sounds like they got a bunch of bad actors to play these roles, because they're very exaggerated. And I suspect the reason for that is that it's for a Korean audience who don't know the subtleties of Western behavior or something like that. And so they're purposefully caricatures, you know, exaggerated caricatures that to us seem just exaggerated to the point of being goofy. Something like that, you know?
Real, honestly, yes. They were over the top. And it kind of took me out of the episode a little bit with how over the top that they were. It was like they were actors playing caricatures of Americans.
Yeah.
And it was a bit too much.
And I hope for season two, if they have Westerners, that they adjust that a little bit, but we'll see.
I hope so. I have lots of hopes for season two. I'm so excited. I can't wait for the episode to drop.
All right. Next one, right, is number 8, Frontman. As finalists, Gi-hun, Sang-woo, and Sebyeok are given a change of outfit to formal clothes. Sebyeok hides a severe stab wound she received from the glass bridge explosion. After eating dinner, each player is left with a steak knife. Gi-hun suggests to Sebyeok that they should ally against Sang-woo, realizing he will do anything to win. Sebyeok instead begs Gi-hun to promise that whoever wins the game will look after the other's loved ones. Gi-hun goes to kill Sang-woo when he falls asleep, but Sebyeok stops him, telling him he's not a murderer. Sebyeok's injury worsens, prompting Gi-hun to call for help. When Gi-hun is away, Sang-woo kills Sebyeok. Okay, this is the worst thing he did. And the guards arrive only to collect her corpse. I just think that was the worst thing he did, because she was so injured that she wasn't even a threat anyway. She's always a threat because she's a badass, but still, anyway. Furious and heartbroken, Gi-hun tries to attack Sang-woo, but is prevented by the guards. Meanwhile, Junho makes it to another island, but is quickly tracked down by the front man and the guards. To Junho's shock, the front man reveals himself to be his brother, In-ho, who tries to recruit him. Oh, I forgot about that part. When he refuses, In-ho shoots Junho in the shoulder, causing him to fall back over a cliff edge and into the sea.
Well, I'm not sure what the year was on this, but it had been... I mean, In-ho had been part of this for a few years post-winning. I mean, had to have been. And you have to wonder if, you know, what he was indoctrinated into, really, truly.
Yeah, I really want to get, I hope they have a great story for him.
Yeah.
About what happened. Why did that happen?
Yeah, why did he do that? I mean, and trying to recruit his brother to be part of it with him. I'm just like, but you have this really weird life.
Yeah. Like if I won, I'd be in that mansion, you know, I'd be, I'd be helping people and having great experiences, not running fucking Squid Game.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Why would you need to?
Yeah.
You've already got enough money to be able to do whatever you want.
And he, In-ho, as frontman, talked a few times about how everyone here it's a fair game or something, you know, we're all, they all have equal opportunity. So I feel like that's something in his character where he, maybe he thinks I earned this and that's a great thing. And now I want to give other people the opportunity to earn it, or I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, because something they do like take the rules very seriously. We haven't talked about that, but they're beyond the don't show your face rule. It is imperative that everyone has this equal opportunity to win. They don't like things like the doctor finding out what the next game is, those little like advantages. They want no one to have any advantages. Level playing field for everyone. They do not want it to be skewed in any way at all. And so they take those things out.
Ooh, I just realized, I bet you at some point these VIP types are going to be forced to compete.
I would love that. I mean,
I bet you that's going to happen.
With the Hunger Games, I know that that was something that was talked about at one point, was, will the capital children have to go into the into the war zone and duke it out together? And I'm thinking, wow, that would be interesting, because none of them are trained to fight like that.
Yeah.
That could be wild.
That, if they don't do something like that, they're missing the boat, I would say.
Yeah.
Otherwise, in this episode, just the lushness of the dinner and them sitting there in their formal outfits, you'd think that would be a nice occasion, but it's absolutely not. So that, no, that really stood out.
It's definitely not.
And then the sadness of Sabiok's death, because by that time, I think most people watching had really come to admire and like her.
Yeah, she's doing this all for her brother.
Yeah.
And they had escaped North Korea, and she was just trying to provide him with a life. And all she did, you know, she was a pickpocket. She was trying to do whatever she could do. And for her to go out like this, again, I mean, I guess, yes, it was equal opportunity that the glass shards were going to explode and injure them. But there were varying degrees of injury that happened, and she took the brunt of it.
Yeah, it's just a tragedy. Okay, one more.
One more. One lucky day. Is it really lucky? I guess we'll see. In the final eponymous Squid Game, Gi-hun defeats Sang-woo after a brutal fight but refuses to kill him. He begs Sang-woo to stop the game and using the third clause. Sang-woo instead stabs himself in the neck and asks Gi-hun to take care of his mother before dying. Gi-hun is returned to Seoul with a bank card to access the prize money, but discovers his own mother has died. A year later, Gi-hun remains traumatized and has not touched his prize money out of guilt. He receives an invitation card from his gangbu and finds Oh Il-nam on his deathbed. Surprise! Il-nam reveals he created the game to entertain bored, wealthy people like himself. He chose games he played as a child and participated in Gi-hun's group out of nostalgia. As they talk, Il-nam wagers with Gi-hun on whether an unconscious man lying on a street corner will be helped before midnight. The man is saved just before the stroke of midnight, and Il-nam dies shortly after. Gi-hun retrieves Sae-byeok's brother and has him looked after by Sang-woo's mother, and gives them a share of the prize money. As Gi-hun travels to the airport to reconnect with his daughter in Los Angeles, he sees the same game recruiter playing Dokji with another desperate player, but manages only to get that player's invitation card. He calls the card's number before boarding his plane, demanding to know who is running the games. The front man joins the call and curtly orders him to get on the plane, but Gi-hun ends the call and returns to the terminal.
Yeah, he then like vow to take the game down or something like that? Which seems like, you wonder, how the hell could he end up in the Squid Game again when they know, or that he won, you know? I mean, I don't know. There's no point in
imagine, we'll though, what him going into a game knowing everything he already knows.
That doesn't seem fair.
It isn't, but it could turn everything on its head if people listened to him. It could shake things up a lot.
That's true.
But I don't know. Like, what are you going to do? Are you going to believe someone who says, I've won this game before, blah, 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 blah? No. I mean, you want, why the hell would you ever come back? Like, it doesn't right. make any sense. So
Do you think they'll play all new games? I think so. I don't think it's going to be the same games. Although, I don't know.
If Gi-hun is in the games again, they have to change it up, I would think.
You'd think so. Because that really would put a new spin on the games. He'd be like...
It would.
I mean...
It would.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see. He's kind of an outside force. He would be an outside force coming into a regimented, like, well-oiled game machine. It's like when a rock hits your windshield. You're going to get a crack and then a bigger crack and a bigger crack and things, you know, until it eventually shatters.
Well, I think there's a guy, what's his name? Hwang Dong-hyuk. He's the guy who created this, writer. Mm-hmm. He wrote them all, and I think he directed them all. I think he said he's planning 3 seasons total. Mm-hmm. So I don't see how Gi-hun could successfully take down the Squid Game in season 2 then, right?
I don't know, unless it's a much bigger thing.
Yeah.
Unless so the Squid one Game part is of just it or a something. Small part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking about like the Belko experiment and how that was just one piece of a much bigger thing.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Could be something like
that. I think this episode really gave us the shocker of Il-nam being alive and being behind everything. So this frail old man that we had come to, you know, adore at the beginning snowed us the entire time and was a mastermind behind it all. So that was a big thing to stomach.
Twist.
And then Sang-woo killing himself.
I mean, so this twist, let's stick on this for a second with Il-nam. Twists are fun, but to be really good to me, there has to be some deeper meaning behind it, you know? And otherwise, like for me, Sixth Sense, I don't care about Sixth Sense. He was dead the whole time. Okay, who cares? Like, so what? That's how I felt. Like, yeah, I didn't expect it, but I don't, so what? What does that mean? But for this, Il-nam actually, you know, created the games. He is dying, so he decided to go ahead and play the games just for kicks, I think. That's sort of interesting to me especially because when he tells Gi-hun why he did it, because he was bored and he just did it for his bored friends, because that really drives home the theme that these people are so rich and powerful that they think of other people as playthings. And so then it makes it a better twist for me, you know? It's still fun anyway, but I'm glad that it had a little bit more to it than just being something we didn't expect and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Like when you realizing that someone that you thought was a good person is actually incredibly evil and a mastermind behind this entire, you know, dome of misery that has been going on for years and years and years. I just was so angry at that point because I was snowed and I like to figure things out as I'm going along and I like to think I'm pretty perceptive. There was nothing that pointed to him being involved in this that I could see.
Yeah, because when we podcasted on it, we knew the whole story because we podcasted on it a couple of years after it aired. And so we tried to look and see if there were clues. And I can't remember, but I don't think we found many, maybe one or two, but nothing. Yeah, they didn't really give it away. I mean, there was like, I think when the riot was happening and one of the people behind the camera said something about the old man or something. I can't remember now. I don't even remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were you going to mention about...
Well, Sang-woo taking himself out of the equation.
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, in that case, I think he kind of did something selfless or at least to help his mother.
It was kind of a redemption thing, but I also look at it like, it's too little too late. just because he was out for himself the entire time. But I also think that he felt his behavior outside of the games, embezzling and all of the things that he had done, was really a black mark on his family name. Disrespectful to his family, and he was ashamed.
Yeah.
And I think had he left the game, he was still going to be stuck with all of that. Like, they were going to arrest him.
He tried to kill himself outside of the game before.
Yeah.
So he knew, if we both leave here with nothing, then I'll probably just kill myself anyway. So why not kill myself right now and leave some money for my family?
And Gi-hun, he knew that Gi-hun was an honorable person and that he would take care of his mother. Yeah, because that is what, you know, he had known him in their childhood experience, that he'd be a man of his word and take care of his mother.
I wonder if their positions were reversed, would Gi-hun at this point trust that Sang-woo would try to help his mom if his mom was still alive?
I don't know about that.
I don't either. I think there is a chance that he would, but I don't think it's nearly as sure of a thing as Gi-hun being that type. I wouldn't say that Sang-woo wouldn't do that, but maybe not.
It's unlikely. I think it's unlikely.
You think it's unlikely, yeah.
Yeah.
What else? The Squid Game was really intense, and I loved that it ended with just these two men battling it out. It was raining, right? And they're just fucking viciously fighting
visually,
with knives. And yeah, so good.
Visually, it was really compelling.
And one thing that I just figured out today, which probably I'm dumb and I should have figured out a long time ago, because they say, you know, this is the Squid Game, and they show the layout of the game with this triangle and square, that's the head of a squid, I think. It's the head of a squid. So, because I always thought, that doesn't look like a squid. There's no arms. But I think it's just the head. Anyway.
I think that has been debated by so many people over the last couple of years, just because we don't really know. Like, it's not a game that's played here in the U.S., so it's not something we're familiar with.
But that makes the most sense to me, because they have, like, that tip at the top sometimes.
You can definitely, though, relate to a lot of the other games, because those are games that we played before. And so you could look at it and say, okay, yeah. And didn't you try to, like, lick the honeycomb candy? Is it you that had the honeycomb candy?
We got some Squid Game branded ones and we played it, and it was really fun.
Yeah.
We weren't always successful.
I feel like we have covered all of this. I think we have hopefully brought people up to date on everything that happened in season one. And do you have hopes for season two? Because I do.
Let me just say one more thing. I thought it was really striking at the end, because Gi-hun didn't collect his money for a long time, and he seemed really troubled by the whole experience. But I think it was like a year later, he decided to get his act together and go see his daughter. And I think it was weird that he had like bright red hair.
I didn't understand.
Was that like a glow up or something to show that, okay, I'm back or something? I don't know. But then he decides to go and take down Squid Game because he sees that guy. And I'm like, man, that's a little cheesy, but it's also exciting. So I guess. Yeah, I'm excited to see what's going to happen next. So for hopes for season two, I will mention that there's a trailer out there, and I will put a link in the show notes. But as Daphne alluded to earlier, I personally don't like watching trailers, so I haven't watched it. If I already am excited about something, then I want to experience all of it in the context of watching it, and watching a trailer takes away from that more than it adds to it for me. So I probably won't watch it, but I'll put it in the show notes if you guys want to watch it. And my main hope is just really that it's as good as season one, that they have enough to say still about the human condition, that it's still good. And if it has all the things I said, I really loved, like, juxtaposition of childlike and horrific and that reality show addictiveness, but it doesn't have anything more to say about the human condition or commentary on wealth disparity or something new, then I probably won't like it quite as much. It's weird because I don't want it to just be a repeat of season one, but I also would not want them to go off in some new direction that's not as good. You know, I think it is going to be more games But you were getting me more excited about it just in this podcast when you were saying that Gi-hun, having done it before, will turn it on its head somehow. So that's exciting.
Yeah. So unlike you, I have watched the trailer about 5 times. I've also watched the introduction to the new characters. So I have that information going into it.
Does that make you more excited, what you've seen?
I'm so excited. Yeah, I'm cool. So excited for what they're doing just based off watching those things. Because when I watch a trailer, I don't read too much into it. I'm really just looking at, are there some cool things coming? Like, mm-hmm. That's all that really matters to me. But meeting the new characters, that made me even more excited because of what they're trying to do. And I think that it's going to bring even more dimension to what they've already presented. And that I'm excited about. And I also, I'm really hoping that we get more backstory on Jun-ho and his brother.
Yes.
What led his brother to be part of Squid Game.
Mm-hmm. And why, like, In-ho is he leading? I think he's leading it now, right? It seems like
he's the front man.
After Oh Il-num died, why is it still going on?
Yeah. I think that was the big thing that I think. Gi-hun could not leave in good faith knowing that that was still going on. And I think he knew that he may have the power to stop it. How he does that or attempts it, I don't know. But I'm really intrigued by the potential for this. I'm also excited that they already, you know, have said it will only be X number of seasons. Because I think when you drag something out, even as good as it is, it can sometimes be too much. Like some of those books that are turned into 2 movies because commercialism, they're trying to make more money.
Milk it, yeah.
Yeah. I'd rather it end where it needs to end and not be pushed or stretched out.
Yeah, and I think there's a chance even a second season could do that. But I hope not. I hope not.
I'm really excited by what I've seen and
cool.
The potential. I'm excited by the potential for us to get to see more of the games, maybe more behind the scenes, like why it was started. It would be great if they gave us a little bit of that info, like even if it's like a 10-minute, like this is why Oh Il-num decided to start it, like why it is in existence. I feel like Jun-ho is like the pathway to us finding and getting to the bottom of some of that information.
And maybe Gi-hun and Jun-ho will actually work together now.
They could.
Potentially.
It would be great.
I wish they wouldn't drop them all at the same time, but I think they're going to. But we'll be covering it week to week, and we're going to try our best not to watch ahead, right? And so
I'm going to do that. I'm not going to be on every episode. So the in-betweens, I'm not going to say I'm not going to binge out of it. Cause I totally am. So excited. Totally.
But, you guys listening, if you're going to, I hope you'll follow along with us, even if you decide to binge it, which I'm guessing most of you will, it still hopefully will be fun for you to listen along and hear us theorize on things that you know the answers to and things like that.
Yeah, you can yell at us as we're going along. God, guys, that already happens. I know what happens. Blah. Please feel free to do that. I do that with podcasts sometimes. I just yell because I already know the answer to something. It's fun if you're in the car, especially.
All right. I think that is it. That's our show. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that. We'll be back soon after season 2 drops. David and Daphne and I are going to podcast about it that day, and I'll try to get it out for the next morning. And then after that, as I said, we'll be doing them episode by episode, week to week. And love to have you guys listening, watching and listening along with us.
And if you want to write in about any of the episodes or send us a voice message, you can reach us at squidgame@podcastica.com.
And as we always do, we'll put up weekly posts about each episode on our Podcastica Facebook page. So people comment on those posts and we read them and respond to them on the podcast. And you can find all that contact information that we just mentioned at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows.
Like?
Star Wars TV Cast. We're covering Skeleton Crew. If you want to hear Paik and I not covering a movie and actually talking about a TV series, we are actually getting to do that, which is cool because we don't usually get to break down something week to week. It's always a movie, almost always a movie. So it's very cool that we're getting to nerd out about something, especially because he's such a big Star Wars nerd and I am the opposite. And so the two of us are getting that opportunity to talk about something from two different places too.
That's really cool. We do that. We've done that a lot over the years. Like with Game of Thrones, we'll have book readers and non-book readers on the same podcast, you know? And I think it's really good to have different perspectives like that. So you can see it in different ways.
Yeah.
And also there's a bunch of stuff coming up. This is a little ways out, so I don't know how much it bears mentioning, but it's on my mind today because we've been getting plans ready. But in February, we've got the last part of Cobra Kai. We've got Yellow Jackets Season 3 and White Lotus Season 3 all starting within like 3 days of each other. And soon after that, The Last of Us Season 2 will be coming out on HBO. So we're excited about a whole bunch of new content to get into pretty soon here.
I know, it's exciting. I feel like the writers and other strikes really slowed things down for a bit, and I think 2024 was a bit slower for TV, but we are going full warp speed when we get to 2025, yeah. And the shows are just going to keep coming all year.
Yeah, and they're all great. They're great shows. All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
We'll talk to you soon for Season 2. Gambu Gang out.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.